Thank you, Catherine, and thank you, everyone. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yes.
Everybody can hear me? Okay, wonderful. So first, I want to start off just by saying thank you to all of you for asking us to share our testimony and our thoughts. And specifically, we wanted to reflect on our faith in God, and for me, where it intersects with parenting as well as work. So I have a few stories to share and a few thoughts to share with you all this morning, as does Tom. But as I reflected more on where my faith intersects with those two things in my life, Matthew 6, verse 34 really came to mind. Anxiety and worry go hand in hand with parenting and work. And especially during this time, I think with COVID and what's going on in the world around us, there's just so much going on. I think anxiety and worry go hand in hand. So that verse came to mind. And what was interesting is when I dropped off Diana with Anne over at Warwick River Christian Learning Center, it just so happened they updated their bulletin board with this particular verse for the kids. And so it kind of, you know, dovetailed together, and it was meant to be. So I'm glad that we chose this to talk about today. So the first thing that I'm going to start with are my observations on faith, and my faith in particular in parenting. And I've got a few stories to share. I like to think about, you know, sharing these stories first in the big picture, kind of the big overall 50,000 foot view on faith and parenting. But then I'm going to share with you also my thoughts on getting into the weeds of the day-to-day life of parenting too, and where my faith comes into play. So I have a story to share about the big picture. And this brings me right back to when we were expecting Diana. Technology-wise, things changed a lot for expecting moms between when I had Samantha and when I was pregnant with Diana. Technology had really changed quite a bit, and there were a lot more testing and things that you could have done while you were expecting. Now, when I was expecting Diana, I fell into the category of with advanced maternal age is the phrase that they like to use now. It used to be called geriatric pregnancy. And again, I was like, what? Okay. So in that category of being an advanced maternal age, they suggested specifically a test that we had not heard of before, and one that we did not have offered to us when we were expecting James and Samantha. And the test was a kind of like a genetic test, but it tested for all these diseases and abnormalities and all of these things. And it was very, very early on in the pregnancy. And it wasn't 100%. So the test that came back, I think the results were not 100% sure, but it was, you know, 60% or something, but they could be wrong. And from what the nurse was telling us, the reason why people like to do this test is because it helps them make big decisions with their pregnancy moving forward, and whether or not to move forward with the pregnancy or to make plans with, you know, planning for the pregnancy if something happened to come back. So we were left with a really big decision. Do we have the test or do we not have the test? And ultimately it came down to there was no reason for us to take the test. I was very strong in my faith that God would watch over us and watch over Diana, and that the test wouldn't change my heart. It wouldn't make me change my plans. It wouldn't make us change our plans or our family. So that was a pretty big test that we weren't really thinking about at the time. It kind of just came up out of nowhere, but it was an interesting test of our faith. And I'm really thankful I have the space to share that with you. So that was definitely a big picture test. The other one that was, this is a different story, kind of changing of gears in parenting and my faith. Another big moment came for me when James was in elementary school, and he had befriended a young boy, and they were good friends. And we went to an open house, and I just so happened to meet this little boy's grandmother for the first time. So I was really excited to meet her. She was very excited to meet me, and went on and on about how great James was and what a great young man he's going to be. And I said the same thing about her grandson. And then she whispered to me in this crowded classroom, "Do you go to church?" And I was like, "Yes." It was almost like a secret club. But I whispered back to her, "Yes, yes, we do every Sunday." And she said, "You know, I could tell and we go to Sunday, we go to church every Sunday as well. And it's so nice to meet someone who still goes to church. And at the moment I was like, oh, this is wonderful. It was a great bonding experience. But when I got back home, I reflected on it and I was like, why were we whispering? Isn't that weird? Like, why is this such an unusual conversation to have? But it is. And in the big picture, I can tell you in my age bracket, at least, it's pretty rare, I think. And it's not as common for families to go to church every Sunday. So it really kind of struck me that that was an interesting conversation, and why were we whispering? And I think it comes down to that anxiety and worry that you might offend someone, or maybe they might look at you differently, or they might judge you. And that's where, you know, that worry comes into play, and you just have to have faith. My faith really helps me in those moments for sure. Now I'm gonna flip gears and talk about the small details of where my faith kicks in during, you know, my parenting of the three kids. So every day, as you all know, the day-to-day of being a parent, pretty hectic, a lot going on, and worries come in for everything. I mean, I'm worried about, you know, the type of milk we buy, all the way to worrying about making sure they're on the right swim team, or are they doing all the right things? Like, I'm always worried about every little thing. If you name a topic, I'm probably worrying about it. It really helped me to kind of sit with the scripture a bit as we picked this topic to talk with you today. I really sat with it because I think in years past, I had really only focused on verse 34, that last one that says, don't worry about tomorrow. That's the big picture one. But if you really start from the beginning of this don't worry scripture, it really gets into the granular details about the flower and about Solomon's fine clothes. And it's not so much about it really spoke to me about, it's the details of where that worry comes from a lot of times, and at least for me in my day-to-day life, and just have faith and trust in God and that he knows my heart and he knows what worries me. And just to have faith and do the best I can, but know ultimately that God is there and my faith is so strong in those moments. A little story to share about the worries. And this one again is kind of layered, because I think also one thing that I struggle with, I worry about pleasing other people a lot. I'm a kind of a people pleaser. I'm working on it. But also I also worry about what I don't want to offend other people ever. And I don't want to cause any concerns or worries in other people. So let me tell you what this means with my faith. So we went to a gymnastics class for Samantha, and I was in the waiting room, and it was just me and Diana. And one of Diana's most favorite books in the whole wide world right now is from my mom, Pat O'Connor. She's on here. She got us this wonderful book of Easter. There are stories about Easter, and it was like the legend of the Easter egg and the meaning behind the robin and the meaning behind the sand dollar. And Diana loves this book. But it's very, it tells the whole story, and it's very, very a religious book, right? So I'm sitting there, I'm reading it to her, and we're just having a good time watching Samantha, and I'm reading my book. And then another mom came in with her two kids, and immediately, I don't know why, but my mind went to, ooh, should I keep reading this book? Or is that going to offend her? Or should, you know, I immediately kind of self-censored, as I'm reading this book. And I closed my eyes and I just took a deep breath. And I said, you know, this isn't, my faith is more important than worrying about, like, I just let the worry go. It's going to be okay. And I just kept reading. And I was really proud of myself in that moment that I didn't let that worry change my way I'm parenting, or kind of change my course. I looked at it more as like being a good representative, I guess, in a weird way, being a good, you know, just staying true to my heart and my faith. So those are kind of the big and small picture reflections I wanted to share with you all today about parenting. And that, again, anxiety and worry, it's always there, and it goes hand in hand with work too. So for those of you that don't know, I do work. I'm a full-time working mom, and I've been in the professional world for, gosh, it's been a long time, it's been about 15 years now since I graduated from law school. And I wanted to share with you kind of, you know, my fears, my worries, my anxiety that goes hand in hand with my work. So I'll start with big picture. The first thing I think I'll start with, which is the easy one, something that I worry about a lot, is being a working mom. I always am worried that I'm not there as much as I should be for my kids or for Tom or for my extended family. I'm kind of feel that I'm constantly pulled in all these different directions. And so there's a lot of worry and a lot of anxiety that go with that. And I am so thankful that the scripture's here because I lean on it a lot. And I lean on a lot of you and my family a lot when I'm feeling those moments where I just feel like I can't do it anymore. It's not good enough. I relax and I'm like, you know what? I do the best I can. God knows my heart. He understands. And he's there to help me, as are my church family and my family. So being a working mom, too many stories to share on that one. So I'm not going to pick a specific one to share with you, but I do want to share one that was really interesting with work and kind of where it intersects with work. My first job out of law school, I used to travel around to different universities and I would do table events, kind of like Coffee Connect that I do here at the church. That's why I love it so much. I used to do it for a living. I would set up kind of like a marketing job. I would set up a table and try to get students and faculty to use the product that I was trying to market. So it was a marketing job that was student facing. And I'm trying to get people to like me and use the product and blah, 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 sales job. And I remember that I used to have this really pretty cross necklace. It's my maiden name's O'Connor. So it's kind of like an Irish style cross that I had for many years. And I always wore it. It was very sparkly, super pretty, wore it all the time. And I remember that one time I did my table event, everything went great. And then I got an email from an administrator at the school saying that a student had complained that I was wearing a cross. And my heart kind of dropped to my stomach and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't mean to offend anyone. But at the same time, what really, this offended someone? And then I had to juxtapose that with what is my job? And that job is supporting my family. So kind of those worries of, you know, if I don't, you know, if I make this big, you know, these, if I compromise and put the cross under my sweater, or if I just don't wear it, you know, that worry of, you know, staying true to my faith and staying true to God versus worrying about my family and then the income that this brings and being being able to keep that job. And ultimately, I chose the job. I was too worried about having stuff being reported back to my supervisors, and I didn't want to offend anyone. So in my head, I made a compromise. And I said, you know what? I'm going to keep wearing my cross, but I'm going to put it under my sweater. And as years progressed, it became where I don't really wear it anymore. It's in my jewelry box, and I just don't wear it anymore. And it became, as I'm getting older now, it's becoming this worry in the back of my mind that I made the wrong call. And so I sit with that. And I do worry about it, but I do pray a lot about it too. And I trust that God knows my heart. But it is, you know, it is tough where your faith and work intersect sometimes. And in the small picture, I do have confidence and faith that I'm able to not worry so much and just be myself. And I can demonstrate my faith through how I interact with people at my work. Through kindness, through understanding, through not being afraid to share my life. When they ask me, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, oh, actually, I'm giving a presentation at my church. I'm really excited about it. And here's what it's about. The old me wouldn't have done that. The old me would have said, oh, you know, we just have, you know, usual family plans for the weekend. But now I'm not as afraid of letting them know who I am. And I think those little moments collect into something bigger. And so having faith in God is so important to me. I'm growing as I, you know, get older and wiser, as they say. But my faith in God is something that I'm always, it's always at the center of my heart. And I do have faith that God knows my heart and my struggles. And again, I just wanted to say thank you for inviting me to speak. I'm going to pass it over now to my husband, Tom, who has a few thoughts as well to share with you this morning.
So faith in God is definitely something that goes along the themes of what I want to talk about today. So just having faith in God. And for me, you know, when I was growing up, I was always interested in history and science and, you know, learning about the past and basically discovering things that told us about how things were and how they came to be. You know, I was just something that was something that I've always been interested in. And at one time in my life, I actually wanted to be an archaeologist. I wanted to go out there and, you know, find all the bones and dig up the past and learn the history of how the earth came to be and how humans lived long ago and how we got to where we are now. And I remember learning about the Bible in Sunday school when I was growing up, because when I was a kid, I would go to Sunday school with my grandmother. And so she would take me to Sunday school and to church every Sunday. And, you know, as I was growing up and learning about stuff, you know, I started to have questions. You know, I struggled for many years. And even at some point later in my life, questioned my own faith because of the lack of historical evidence. You know, I struggled with the two sides of believing in history and science and also believing in faith, you know. And at one point in my life, I was like, you know, it was hard for me to believe that everything that's written in the Bible was 100% true. And, you know, there was inconsistencies in the Bible that made me struggle with really accepting it. You know, I was like, okay, was Samson really strong because he had hair? Was Abraham really 100 years old? And was Sarah really 90 years old when they had a child? Was Lot's wife really actually turned into salt? Or were these just stories? You know what I mean? And so it's something, you know, and then of course today I'm a history teacher. So like I still have a true strong belief in history and seeing things with my own eyes, but also I have faith. And so that's something growing up throughout my adult life that I struggle with early on in my adult life. And throughout my life, when I was at my lowest point in my faith, I even once questioned, did anything in the Bible actually ever happen? Was it even really a Jesus, you know, or were all these things just stories, you know? And so at some point in my life, I even questioned that, or at least had that question in my mind, because I was so focused on history and science and how, you know, you have to see something to know that it's real, you know? And at one point when I was in high school, I stopped going to church altogether. I guess my priorities had changed, or my faith maybe wavered, or just church didn't seem as important to me at the time. And so at some point in my life, especially in high school and early on, when I first started going to college, it wasn't as important in my life. But even though I questioned the Bible, I never questioned the existence of God. I still found myself praying to God when I needed to. And at some point, I don't remember when, but at some point I started to say a prayer or a blessing at every meal. It wasn't something that my family did every day, or did a lot, but it's something I started doing on my own. And thinking back now, I don't remember how or why I started it, but I know it always made me feel good to know that I talked to God every day. And just doing that made it easier to pray to God at other times, multiple times a day, whenever I needed to bless someone who was hurt or sick or just needed a blessing, or whenever I wanted to ask God for forgiveness, or anytime I just wanted to thank God for something that went right in my life. You know, just a simple act of praying at a mealtime made it easier to talk to God at other times. And then, of course, when I met my wife, I incorporated that into our mealtimes together. We started praying. We would have meals together. And then we had the kids. It just became part of our routine, just a part of our life that you pray before every meal, and you use it as a time to talk to God and thank God. And some people may look at it and say, well, what you're saying is just a blessing. You're just blessing the food. But I look at it as I'm praying to God and I'm thanking him for giving us everything we have, including the food. And sometimes if you have extra prayers that need to go on, you can do that at that time as well. And so, you know, that is something that is kind of is a part of our life now, and something that wasn't a part of my life when I was growing up and was something I struggled with. Again, reconciling the two halves of my brain was like, okay, one half is focused on history and science and did these things actually happen, and these questions that I had, and also having faith in God and knowing that faith will see you through, and faith can help you. And so as I got older and as I started to think about more things and started to come to terms with different things, and as my faith became stronger, I started to think of things in a different way. And I thought that as Christians, you know, we can see God's glory anytime we look up at the night sky and we see a shooting star, or we see other planets. Anytime we see stars colliding with a telescope in some other galaxy, or we see a moon revolving around a sun or revolving around a planet, all that is part of God's glory. God's glory is revealed to us by the symmetry of a beautiful flower, a simple, beautiful flower. You can say this is God's glory because it's very simple and it's very beautiful. But at the same time, you can see God's glory in how complex the biochemical cells that make up this flower is. So it's the two parts, right? Very, very simple symmetry of how beautiful the flower is, but also very complex in its what it's made up of, right? And so I started to think about things that science couldn't answer or would have a hard time answering, right? I started to think about how complicated the human nervous system is, right? So much so that the brain by itself has like 100 billion nerve cells, right? Or just think about, I looked up, I researched a couple of things years ago when I was thinking about this to find interesting facts about the human body, and the human body itself made me think, okay, God must be responsible for this, right? And one of the facts that I always remembered that I thought was very interesting was your foot. Think about your foot, okay? Your foot is made up of 38 bones, 30 joints, and more than 100 muscles, tendons, and ligaments, which all have to work in unison just to allow us to walk. So that's a pretty amazing, simple, but yet complex fact, right? 38 bones, 30 joints, 100 muscles, tendons, and ligaments, all those have to work in unison just to allow us to walk, right? And there are so many complex systems within our bodies that have to coexist and work together every day, every minute of every day. And the fact that there are a certain way when we're born and they change and they grow and they evolve over the course of our lifetime, I can't believe that that's just a coincidence, right? I started to think, you know what, there's no way that it's just a coincidence that all this stuff in our body and our lives work together just by coincidence. Something greater has to create this and make this happen, right? And so it was kind of around that time that I started to realize, you know what, even though you can't physically see something or have something or physical evidence, doesn't mean that it's not true. And that's when my faith really started to take over, when I started to think about it that way and started to think about all these things in our bodies, in our world, in our life, and how all that is possible. Again, not from just coincidence or just random luck, right? There's got to be, God has to be there. God is the one who creates all that. God is the one who makes all that possible, right? And I'm not really sure at what point, when, but at some point in my life, I began to reconcile my belief in science and history with my belief in God and my faith. And I started thinking about all these little things that has happened in our universe. And that we've been here 4.5 billion years ago, right? The Earth is 4.5 billion years old, but that's part of God's plan. I started thinking, you know what? All this stuff that science has proven is different than what was in the Bible, that's all part of God's plan. You know, the Earth being 4.5 billion years old, that's part of God's plan. Everything that's happened that allows humans to evolve into what we are today, that's all part of God's plan as well. Right. And I think the men who wrote the passages and the stories in the Bible were writing from what they knew. They were writing from their faith in God, and they were writing from stories that they heard from others who had that same faith in God. And today, even though I have a strong belief in history and science, my belief in God and my faith is just as strong, if not stronger. And I know that coming to this church and being around the people of this congregation has definitely helped me strengthen my faith. It's definitely something that I feel is a strong influence in my life, being at this church with everyone here. And so I'm really happy to be part of this congregation for all these many years. And I'll close out my lesson here with a quote that I found from Pope John Paul II. And he wrote, where he said, science can purify religion from error and superstition. Religion can purify science from idolatry and false absolutes. Each can draw the other into a wider world, a world in which both can flourish.